Jackson gave me the news of a planet far away. And Colonel O'Neill will assemble a team that will try to save the day. Dr. Sam has a master plan and a science attitude. And the Jaffa Tube, he's part of the deal with his trusty Goa'uld. It's just a regular day at Stargate Command, and it might be hard to understand.
Welcome back, everyone, to Three Fries Short, Unearthing the Stargate.
Hello, hello, hello.
I'm your co-fry,
so
Sarah.
To be here. Oh, yes. Sorry, Sarah, go ahead.
I'm your co-fry, Sarah.
I am your co-fry, Christina.
And I am your co-fry, Rebecca.
And we're back.
We are back. I've just realized it maybe before, but I am the only one that still has her TikTok name, like, in her, like, thing.
Yeah, we never did have. I never had mine in there.
I'm going for anonymity.
What?
And now mine is very, like, that is bold of you, because it's General Sam Carter now. So
It is.
I was thinking of changing my name too, just to, again, fresher start. I don't know what, though.
But I like Sarah S. Stewart. But yeah, whatever you want to do.
I'm going to go ahead and just lean into the fact that I don't post any of my music stuff. So why am I still the Pirate Queen on there? Like, the Pirate Queen is my music life. So, yeah.
I like it.
So just leaning into that headcanon that Sam is in charge of the SGC.
Absolutely, yeah. She is. Absolutely. Yes. And I'm just leaning into my split personalities, which is coming through on all platforms. All platforms. But yes, welcome back. Very excited to be here. This is a not favorite episode, but interesting nonetheless.
We'll make it interesting, don't worry. But like, I kind of hated it. I was like, this doesn't hit right, man.
This,
like,
ain't
it's not hitting like some other episodes be hitting.
I will tell you, it did not work out as a treadmill episode.
Mm-mm.
That is a thing that did not work out. So, yeah, tried it.
We got you.
Not so much. Oh, no, I watched about 2/3 of it today, and I've watched it, I think, recently enough. So,
well, you're not going to be surprised that the ending was a fucking bummer. Stone cold, as always. I'm like, this.
Of course.
God. Oh, and I think I mentioned this before, but like, with the level of TV that we have now that like HBO is putting out, and like all the prestige television, network TV is just not doing it for me as much. Like, if I try and watch a TV show on like Fox or like whatever, even dramas, especially, comedies are different. But if they're trying to be dramatic, it's like, you guys can't say shit. I can't take you seriously. You literally cannot curse. Like, this feels very unrealistic. And it just...
The only network television that I sometimes watch are the really terrible... EMS based or fire based shows like 911 or 911 Lone Star. Because
what?
You want to talk about inaccuracies. Oh my God. It's laughable. So it's a good time.
Yeah. I didn't even know those shows existed.
Oh yeah. Huh. They're like from like the first 5 minutes in, just like, no, medically, no, everybody would have been sued. Like, everybody, no.
People potentially could have died. Like,
I mean, are they like, at least accurate with the monitors? Like, do people have saturations of their O2 like over 100, or like, is it realistic?
Well, this is usually pre-hospital, so you don't see a ton of it. But it's like in the field blood transfusion.
What? Sounds fake. And I don't know shit about anything. And I'm like, sounds fake.
Yeah, Liv Tyler's in 911 Lone Star, and she's like, really? Plays a paramedic, and she like, she intubates this kid at his house because he's having some sort of asthma attack or something and can't breathe. Anyway,
no way.
And extubates him and just leaves him at home once he's fixed.
Did you ever see the movie with Sandra Bullock and Melissa McCarthy called The Heat?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
where she tries to to intubate them. And I think like it makes me think of you because you would be that person where it's like you didn't have to intubate him. You could have just removed the chunk of pancake from his mouth. Like,
Yep.
Oh my God. Okay, well, we are off to the races with our tangents from the beginning.
We're only like 5 minutes in. We're okay.
Let's get into this episode. But really quick, before we interrupt your episode for a birth control break, excuse me, I'll be right back.
Oh gosh, birth control. Do.
Transparency about birth control. It's important and people use it.
Yes, they do.
They shouldn't.
We're not talking about it.
All right, Sarah. All right.
So we're talking about rules of engagement, and this kind of was
we're talking
like,
about
rules of engagement.
Yeah, it wasn't a very fun episode. I don't think I was kind of bored. I couldn't even find some like good fun facts about it. I thought we'll get into it.
Yeah, we'll get it. Let's speed through it. I have some ideas at the end.
So the episode opens off world. Again, will we ever see the SGC? Who knows? Will we see this episode? To
do something with that set for
a mystery
for a while.
I was gonna be so pissed if we didn't end up seeing the SGC again. Because I was like, is this really gonna be another episode completely off world? Spoiler alert, we do see the SGC. Break that tension for you right now.
Spoiler alert.
People were stressed. People were stressed.
So the UAV showed evidence of some kind of camp, and that's where they're headed off to now. And then they hear staff weapons firing in the distance. So over a ridge, conveniently again, like they're always over a ridge looking down on the action. They never like stumble into it. But they see that another SG team is under fire from a Jaffa fleet, but something looks fishy. They aren't returning fire, and there shouldn't even be any SG teams on this planet right now. So they're like, what the fuck? Like, who are they? Like, what's happening? Sam mentions that it could be SG-11 because they went missing 8 months ago. And then Jack tries to contact them on the radio, but there's no reply. They decide to move in and help the SG team, but it's all very confusing. And one of the SG team members asks what quadrant SG-1 is from. So different lingo. And then this SG team, this mystery team, opens fire on us. They shoot them.
Mm-hmm.
And they're shot. It's all very dramatic, too. Like,
I love your like all caps. Very dramatically.
The slow motion. So
but it's like... bodies like, rolling in air, like, oh.
Yes, it was so bad. And it's like, come on, like, you don't have to do this dog. And we know they're not dead. You don't have to do this dog and pony show. But they're all shot very dramatically. And it looks like they're shot with guns, but like red lasers come out of them. So they're not shot with bullets. We have our opening credits, and then SG-1 wake up in a tent. They are relatively unharmed. Sam has this long scratch on her face, and I purposely went to look for, like...
It's not. There's nothing there.
No.
Yeah,
it also looks like it's probably a real scratch.
That's what I was wondering. I was like, did she get, like, scratched by her cat or something that day? And they were like, let's just roll with it. But probably. I did find... No, because... Maybe, honestly. Because I found a, like, in... trivia, I found that as the episode progresses, it disappears, and it's technically within that universe the same day. So within the same day, it disappears completely. So I wonder if it was real and they were just like, okay, we'll work with it.
It definitely looks real, because I feel like usually when you have like fake like scratches and stuff, it looks more dramatic. And that was just a very like very light scratch, like a standard scratch.
Yeah.
Like a cat scratch or something. Yeah. That's exactly what it looks like.
But it's like such an aggressive scratch. I mean, it's like...
It's a weird placement, not where they would typically place it. Nobody else has any scratches or is all busted up. So it just stuck out to me as weird. I was like, there's something... I want to find out if there's anything more to that. But
Amanda Tapping, if you're out there, please let us know.
Why do you remember
so in this episode?
Do August 19th, 1999, were you scratched by your cat?
We must know.
She's gonna be like, what the fuck are you talking? I don't remember like any of that. So we see this young soldier come into the tent, and this is where I have some dialogue. It's O'Neill, Soldier, Carter, and Daniel. So I'll do O'Neill.
Okay. Carter's only got like one line, so I'll be Soldier and Carter.
Okay. Yep, and I'll just pick up Daniel.
I wanted to, it was funny. Okay, go ahead. Oh, take it away, Soldier.
Boy, are you guys going to get it.
Get what? From whom?
Hey, you can't talk.
Why not?
Because you're dead.
Dead?
Pretending not to be dead will just get you into more trouble.
More trouble than dead?
Come on, Colonel, you know better. Stop breaking the rules.
I'm sorry, who's in charge here?
Casualties don't ask questions. And then Carter says, what rules are we talking about exactly? And then the soldier says,
so aggressively, he walks over to her and like puts his gun like right in her face. And he says,
I said, stop it.
We're just trying to understand, if we're supposed to be dead, how are you supposed to kill us again?
You want to find out, Four Eyes? Huh?
Four Eyes?
Easy, big fella. Just play dead.
Okay. All right. This, I know what this whole episode makes me think of. It makes me think of when I'm playing pretend with John and his boys and Ryder in like Fortnite or in a battle, and like we're all like assuming roles, and there's like these made up rules, and I'm like, who made up these rules? Because they're like, you can't shoot you, you can shoot you. And I'm like, I don't understand. This is what this makes me think of. It's just like play pretend. Like,
yeah, pretend rules that pretend rules. Like don't make any sense and are constantly in flux.
Constantly in flux. Like never the same. Yeah. Never. Okay, sorry, continue.
But also, he calls Daniel Four Eyes, and it's like, I was expecting him, Daniel, to be like, I haven't been called that since like fifth grade. What are you, what, really? Like, it's so niche, honestly. And when we find out, like, there is some unbelievability when it comes to certain things, and this kind of is one of them. So when we get there, I'll elaborate. But the soldier tells SG-1 to follow him, and they notice the patch that he's wearing says SGX. There is no SGX, at least under Hammond's command. So they're all left to wonder, like, is this the NID? Is Mayborn behind it? Which probably would have been more interesting, but who am I? So they're kind of like, what the hell is going on? As they follow this soldier, we see many other soldiers training, and it's some kind of war game that they think they're training for. Like, if this is fake battle, they're preparing for something. It's a training exercise. And they are led to a captain, and he immediately begins giving them shit from the jump. So we have the captain. We have O'Neill, Carter, and Teal'c. So again, I'll be O'Neill.
I can be captain, and then there's Daniel.
I'll grab the Teal'c too. Or...
No, it's fine. They all mostly only have one line.
Okay.
So.
Okay. No rank is above strict adherence to the rules of engagement. Rule 2, Article 4. Unauthorized forces shall be shot on sight. You were unauthorized. In fact, you ruined our ambush. Nearly half the enemy team got away.
Carter, I've never been big on regs, so is this familiar to you?
No, sir.
And then Teal'c says, they are familiar to me. Kelva, Jaffa.
You're not from D Quadrant.
We are not.
You came through the Chop Eye. This is a challenge. And then Daniel says, the Chop Eye?
Yep, so he blew his cover. Mm-hmm. He used a not-Earth term. And the captain apologizes to Teal'c for revealing himself and asked to be executed for the remainder of the day, as in, like, I'll play dead. But Jack and Teal'c allow him to be spared. So now we're kind of thinking, are they Jaffa? Like, what is this? They don't look like Jaffa. They don't have like the forehead thing, and they're not dressed like Jaffa. So like, what's the scoop? The captain introduces himself as Kyle Rogers. He was given by a previous Jaffa master to practice the exercise of battle according to the rules of engagement until the return of Apophis, where they'll be ready to face the final challenge.
Okay, pause. If you guys just saw me wave just now, that was absolutely my ADHD brain waving hi to Nell, who's in the comments, who said, hello, fellow Fry. And I just read it and went, hi. in my head. So hi.
Hello.
Welcome. So,
we have some more dialogue. This is kind of plot dumpy. It's like plot heavy in the beginning.
This shit bothers me. This dialogue specifically is unbelievable to me. I'll talk about it afterwards.
Okay, I want to know. I'm interested. So we have Carter, Rogers, O'Neill, Daniel.
I'll stay Rogers.
Okay, Carter. I'll do the O'Neill. And then, Christina, you want to grab that one Daniel line?
Oh, yeah. Okay.
You're training to serve Apophis wearing SG uniforms?
To know the enemy, Quadrant A is spared no detail. We've studied long and hard and know much.
About Earth.
Oh, yes. Corn and cotton are indigenous to North America.
That information could save your life one day.
So you see, Master Teal'c, my mistake will not happen again. I am ready to infiltrate the Tari at your command. And then Daniel says, so if you're pretending to be, who were those Jaffa attacking you? Roger says, they were led by my second in command, Captain Nelson, as part of a daily exercise. We have kept the Jaffa encampment separate so that we may better practice our Earth behavior. Shall I have him sent for?
So,
pause. Christina. Yeah.
What?
I feel like your microphone has changed.
Yeah, it sounds a little.
It sounds like your hair is great. Like, it sounds like your headphones are probably your microphone now.
Okay, hold on.
Yeah, I can hear you, but it sounds like you're like something with your hair.
Okay, is that better?
Move your head.
Oh, no. It's worse.
What happened? Like, it happened in the middle of that dialogue.
Mm-hmm. Because my thing came out. Hold on. Oh, no, memento.
That's fine. Aren't you all glad you get to be part of this live experience that I will not edit out of the final episode anyway? So,
okay, is that better?
Yes.
You're back.
Hey, at all least right. I can navigate technical issues. Do we need to re-go through that, or is my hair scratchiness acceptable for
it's
everybody?
Fine.
For
the moment? I'm just gonna go with it. It's like, I'm just glad we fixed it and didn't get through the rest of the episode with it. So
yeah.
Oh yeah.
Okay, so my problem with this info, with this like plot dumping, is that, and this happens in a lot of shows, it's not just this episode, it's not just Stargate, but like, the guy's got to get suspicious. Like, they're asking all these questions
mm-hmm.
in a way that isn't interrogating. It's like confusion. And he's just answering the questions like willy-nilly. I'd be like, of course, why don't you get this? But he's not acting like that at all.
Well, he's probably terrified because he's like, it's a test. It's a test.
That's what I kind of got to, is like, he's thinking everything is a test, especially because now Teal'c knows the scoop and he knows what's going on. He's like asserting that dominance of like, oh, I know what this is all about. But then, I don't know, like, Daniel, you're right, because Daniel and Sam, like, they're asking all these questions.
In a way, it's just like, maybe that mm-hmm. maybe the kid just has been on this planet for way too long to not like have to deal with questions like this. But it's the way in which they're delivered in this like mm-hmm. huh sort of way that's like, this doesn't seem like you're testing the kid. This seems like you're actually confused and asking questions.
Yeah.
So,
but maybe
it's always bothered me.
But maybe they've never experienced like confusion, right? Because there's never been the opportunity to like dissect something. It's just this is what's said, this is what you believe. So there's never been the opportunity to have like abstract thought around it. But, you know.
Sure. We could go with that. I feel like it wasn't intentionally meant that way, but it was a way to like, we have to establish what's going on here. But I like to think, you know, we can go with that.
Yeah.
Like, this kid's been in command of this place for God knows how long. And like, nobody has come to stop them from just doing the same thing day in and day out for like a long time. So
I also thought it was weird that he said corn and cotton are indigenous to North America. That was fucking weird. Like, okay, drop in some knowledge, bro. Like, corn and cotton. Like, it was just like such a weird litmus test of like, look at how studious I am about the Earth culture. And then to kind of hammer home the point, they are all very young. Like, mm-hmm. it honestly reminds me of sometimes Cree means give me exposition.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for that. Thank you. But they're all really young, and it gives me like an icky vibe of like, I feel like I'm in a Call of Duty lobby and I'm about to get verbally assaulted by like a 17-year-old. Like, I'm scared. I don't like this. I'm scared. Like, because the first guy that came into the tent was super aggressive and like smug, mm-hmm. and like he had that like young person attitude of like, I rule the world and like nothing can hurt me, and like I don't know, it was weird. I don't like it. It gives me the ick. Mm-hmm. Just again, like, again, I'm just thinking of like, I'm about to get verbally assaulted through a headset and be told to like go make a sandwich or something.
Oh god.
Yeah. Oh, so, yeah,
it's the vibe.
So okay. Jack requests to get their weapons back, and Kyle agrees and takes them to the armory tent. Sam points out that none of the people there are actually Jaffa with symbiote pouches. They are just regular, degular people. So that even, like, it's even more confusing, because it's like, okay, it would be different if they were actually Jaffa and this was a training exercise. That would make more sense. But now it's like, they're just regular ass people. Like, this is fucking weird. What mm-hmm. is happening? So Teal'c goes on to plot dump some more, and he says Apophis only had a handful of Jaffa left. It's common practice among the Ghoul to use humans as fodder during battle, especially when they're like in the shit and about to get their asses kicked. So I kind of wonder what that process would be like of like recruiting regular humans and how that mm-hmm. would work. But that's what they did, and it's weird. This is so bizarre, and I don't think we really ever revisit this.
But I feel like recruiting is recruiting, like, because he says later on that they were all brought through different places. So I definitely think it's more of like a slave trade, like slaves, bringing them in.
True.
Vibe. But yes, anyway.
Brainwashed, culty. Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So they begin to look for their weapons in this tent. Teal'c explains the rules of engagement is a code of battle during a young Jaffa's training, spoken by Apophis himself. The weapons they use are called Intar, which only mean Intar. They do not mean anything else.
It's just short for...
for nothing.
Intar Nicotel.
Intar Nicotel.
But they're only used to stun, and they can take the form of any weapon. So they can plug it into a staff weapon, they can plug it into something that looks like a gun, and they will be used to stun. So Sam and Daniel continue to search for their gear among the fake weapons. Teal'c speaks with Kyle again and asks him if he has something called a Vokum. And it's a training instrument to assemble his men for inspection, and it kind of might help them get the upper hand in the situation. So Kyle reappears with a small gray sphere, places it on the ground before his men, activating it. A beam of energy shoots up into the sky, and it forms this giant holographic image of Apophis.
I mean, it's massive.
It truly
giant
is.
Giant Apophis.
Yeah. And even like Sam and Daniel like come out of the tent. They're like, what the hell is going on? They're like, oh, it's okay.
Carter's like, sir?
Yeah.
He's like, it's fine.
It's fine. It's just a big old image of Apophis. But he says, warriors of Apophis, or the holographic image says, warriors of Apophis, assemble before me and listen to that. He that possesses the Vokum, the warriors before you speak my name, heed his words. So it's kind of like whoever has this thing holds the key to the kingdom. Like, they will listen to you. And mm-hmm. because Teal'c knew about it, it kind of does give him the upper hand. So Teal'c goes around and inspects these group of men, or young boys, rather. He reaches one dressed as a Jaffa, who is the second in command, called Novar. For the games, he leads the side of the Jaffa warriors, and his Earth name is Captain Nelson. So they have, like, Earth sonas that they use to, like... Earth sonas. to, like, when they're playing for the other team. If you look close at his forehead symbol, it's all jacked up because like they drew it on. It's not supposed to look real. It's supposed to look like really shitty and like they're they're cosplaying, essentially.
They are cosplaying.
Mm-hmm. So Teal'c gives Jack authority to address the team, and Jack is like, hey, the war games are over because it's gonna rain and you can go home now. Which is I was like, Jack, you gotta turn it on a little bit. Like, they're not gonna believe you. They're not gonna buy it. And they didn't at all.
Oh god, no.
Also, back in the armory tent, Sam and Daniel cannot find their weapons, which means some of the soldiers playing this war game are out in the field with real weapons. Teal'c tries to have Kyle recall his soldiers, but he's like, I'm not falling for that. This is a challenge. And I'm not gonna like fail again. Like, you're not gonna trick me. So Jack and Teal'c try to tell him the truth that Apophis is dead. Obviously, none of them believe him. And they're just like, we're gonna go continue our like thing. We gotta go. Like, we gotta play our game. So SG-1 also decide to join this game since they are still missing weapons. They come across someone who was killed by a staff weapon. Kyle ends up getting shot by a staff weapon and believes this is the final challenge, which is when first blood is shed and the games now become real. The games wrap up. They recover all their weapons and tend to Kyle's injuries. He needs to go back to the SGC for medical attention. And he's like kind of refusing to go. He's like, this is a test. Like, I don't want to go. Like, whatever. And then Daniel, smartly enough, convinces him. So, Christina, do you want to read that?
Yeah. So Daniel says, well, what if I told you we were bringing you to see Apophis personally to show him that blood has been shed and that your quadrant is truly ready for his return? If we don't bring you back with us, then Apophis will know you failed our challenge and never return.
Got that reverse psychology
smart
on him. So Kyle does agree to go with them. And then we arrive back at the SGC fucking finally. It's been 2.5 episodes. We haven't seen anything. Hammond, the SGC, the gate room, nothing.
Nothing.
Missed Hammy.
Yeah.
Oh, Hammy.
So Kyle immediately figures out that he's been bamboozled and he freaks out and he's like calling everyone traitors and all that good stuff. Frazier takes him to the infirmary and Hammond wants to debrief like immediately. So we have some dialogue. Hammond, Teal'c, Carter, Hammond, O'Neill, Carter, Teal'c, Dan, Jesus.
Hammond and Carter.
Do O'Neill.
And then I'll just do Teal'c, Daniel.
Okay, excellent.
It's been a while since I've done my Hammond.
Yeah. I was going to say, get that Hammy out.
Don't laugh before I even start talking. All right. What's this final challenge all about?
In my training, it is when we received our actual staff weapons. The two opposing camps then engaged in battle until one side emerged victorious.
You killed each other?
The Gould wish only the strong to prevail, Major Carter. I was among the victors. We were then honored by Apophis, and I became a member of his personal guard.
And that's what's about to happen to those boys.
As long as they don't have any real weapons with which to play, I don't see how.
Well, the only lethal weapons I found in the armory belong to us. The rest were Intars.
The Jaffa masters who once supervised their war games have long ago abandoned them. Yet they have maintained their games until this day without fail. And Daniel says, so what are you saying? Teal'c says, that they are extremely resourceful and most determined.
So they might try to fulfill the final challenge, whether they're issued lethal weapons or not.
Yeah, yep. Lethal weapon. So essentially, like, if you think about it, Apophis croaked, all of his, like, actual Jaffa dispersed and left and did whatever. You know, they shacked up with Sokar or whoever else. And these kids have been on this planet by themselves keeping up this charade, thinking like this master Jaffa will come back and whatever, but they've been keeping up with it. So they've been abandoned. They don't even realize it. And then again, they don't even realize that Apophis is dead. So Sam suggests that they go back so they can prevent them from shooting each other and killing each other. And Jack goes to see what he can get out of Kyle. So this is a really funny interaction.
All right, I'll be Rogers.
Yeah, do you want to be O'Neill, Rebecca?
Sure.
You two got this.
Mm-hmm. Old Doc Fraser says you haven't been eating.
It's poison.
It's hospital food. Of course it is.
Rogers doesn't respond. O'Neill takes another bite of his sandwich.
Mmm. Tuna.
Go to SoCar.
It's go to hell, actually, which, by the way, is a very rude thing to say to a person offering you a sandwich.
It means the same.
You've got a point.
I will reveal nothing. You may begin torturing me.
Oh, I've already begun. This is the infamous tuna torture.
He waves a plate of food under Roger's nose.
Last chance.
Roger gives in and reluctantly takes the sandwich.
Good. So you and I should have a little talk about this final challenge thing.
We will battle to the death, and Apophis will choose the victors as his personal guard.
All right. I'm going to tell you the absolute truth right now. Apophis is dead.
Gods cannot die.
Why do you think he's been gone for so long? Why have all the Jaffa masters left? Apophis was on his way out when you got drafted.
You lie.
What if he told you himself?
If Apophis can speak, then he cannot be dead.
So I actually have a bit of trivia about this scene because, and Rebecca, you'll appreciate this as a filmmaker. Throughout the scene, that sandwich is various shapes and sizes. Like it gets smaller, it gets bigger, it's smaller again. Like how many sandwiches did he eat in that scene? The world will never know.
Probably too many. Here's a funny thing. There apparently that is the reason why Jell-O was so prevalent in the mess hall in Stargate, because Jell-O doesn't like fill you up. So like a lot of times when people are sitting there eating, it's Jell-O so that they can like just kind of play around with it and they eat it, and then it's not like going to fill them up. I have a scene in my film, my feature film, where the two characters are eating Chinese food and both of the actors were just housing that Chinese food.
Oh, and God. We had to do about 8 takes of this,
one shot, like no cut, like sort of deal. We were just doing it one shot. And by the end, they were just done.
Well, don't they usually do like a chuck bucket or whatever where you just like chew it and then spit it afterwards?
Yes. All the warnings were given to the two actors in question, but they I guess the food was really good because we like literally ordered it delivery for the scene. So
God. Hashtag relatable.
So that's really why Jell-O and then I guess eventually blue Jell-O became such a thing in Stargate. So
I like it. Love that. So they end up showing Kyle the footage of Apophis from Serpent Song when he dies, showing like he's afraid and like all that. The fact that they have footage that I'll suspend my disbelief. So finally Kyle believes them and he's like, I gotta return to help my men. Like, I can't let them do this. Like, let them die for like some bullshit reason now. Cause he's like, this is dumb. So we have another plot dump. This is a couple. We got Hammond, Rogers, O'Neill, Carter.
I'll stay Rogers.
I'll do O'Neill.
Hammond and Carter.
Excellent.
What's your real name, son?
My true name is Ruff. What is it? Rafiator? I don't know, sir.
Close enough.
Sure.
Your Earth name is Kyle. Can we just call you Kyle?
That would be fine, sir. I'm very used to that.
How long have you been on that planet?
We were brought there through our Chopai 5 cycles ago from a number of different worlds.
Right after we blew up Apophis' ships.
He commanded we worship no other god but him. He left many Jaffa warriors with us. They taught us everything.
Who taught you about Earth, our uniforms, weapons?
Near the beginning, Apophis captured one of your SG teams and forced them to teach us.
SG-11?
Yes. At first, that was all they would reveal. Our Jaffa masters forced them to say things. We listened to your speech, observed your ways, but they did not last long.
What happened to them?
One day, their bodies were put on display in the encampment. I do not know how they died. Only that they refused to tell the Jaffa masters all that was asked of them. Then our Jaffa masters began to leave us, one by one. They said to help Apophis win a great battle. And then we were alone.
Thank you for your cooperation, son.
May I now ask for your cooperation, sir?
Go on.
As we speak, my men are preparing for the final challenge.
I was under the impression your weapons are non-lethal.
They are, but before Master Gartok left, he showed Captain Nelson and myself a cave. Inside were weapons intended for the final challenge. Real weapons.
What are we talking about here, weapons-wise?
They are exactly like your own, MP5s. He told us it was with those that we would one day infiltrate the Tauri and destroy you. May I request permission to be returned to my men, sir, to tell them what I've learned and to try and stop them? They know the soldiers won't...
No, that's...
Oh, that's what I was like.
That's just notes. So, this was super interesting because it kind of ties back to, like, SG-11 going missing. And that's how they kind of learned all this stuff about how SG teams operate. It's kind of hard to buy, though. Like, where did they get all of that equipment on that planet? That is not something an SG team carries with them. That's too much stuff. The fact that, like how much talking could they have done for them to learn to speak exactly like Four Eyes? Is that an insult on another planet?
No, but I love that they were like, okay, this is what we're going to do to like give it away. Cause they're like, gave them those ridiculous things that would like not be appropriate to be like, okay, they're never going to pass because come on now.
Yeah.
Maybe just imagine them fucking with them. Like,
yeah, I could see that.
Cause like, they just keep interrogating, and all the guy says is cotton and whatever from North America, like over and over again.
Like bizarre.
Imagine like a torture scene, and they're like, what is your main source of whatever? Blah, blah, blah. Tell us. And he's like, cotton and corn. It's cotton and corn. It's cotton and corn. He's Four Eyes, and he like tries to give him an insult, and they think it's like the rudest thing ever.
Yeah.
Imagine.
It's kind of like sad and funny at the same time. It's like they're dead now. They are dead. They died. And it's like they died under torture to be like, so like, what kind of crops do you grow? Like that's the kind of shit that they died for. Oh, it's so messed up.
Mm-hmm.
So they know that these soldiers are not going to believe Kyle. And they devise a plan to use the Vokum to broadcast the footage of Apophis dying in order to convince them.
One of my favorite parts, and I didn't realize it because I wasn't paying attention to what they called the device until the end, but O'Neill is like yelling at Carter and he's like, Carter, the vacuum. And I was like, why is he telling her to get the vacuum?
He
tells her to get the vacuum. And I'm like, what?
I did notice, and that's kind of, like, I kind of really minimized this. So they go back to the planet, they infiltrate the camp and use the Vokum to show the footage after giving Sam entirely too much shit for taking too long. And I get it. They're under fire, but I personally would probably do one of two things. I would cry and be like, don't yell at me. I'm trying my best. Or I would be like, please shut the fuck up. Don't yell at me. I'm trying to focus. Don't yell at me. Like, get shut up. Like, it would be one of those two things. I would cry or get very angry. I don't know. It depends on the day. But I get it. They're under fire. But, like, Sam's doing her best, right? She's trying to combine Earth technology and Ghoul technology to do this thing. And
VCR Earth technology.
But she's sitting there, like, hacking away, like, and Teal'c's like, Carter. And he's like, she's like, it takes time, Teal'c, or whatever. And so he just gets frustrated. And he just, like, goes to join battle. Like, he, like, leaves her because he's like, I'm not standing here for this. And he, like, goes and he's like, O'Neill. He's like, okay, join the fight. And then he leaves Carter by herself. Like, he doesn't defend her at all. He just leaves her.
Like, do you guys want to fucking
do
this?
Last time that happens in the show.
No.
Backseat drivers, get your ass up here and do it yourself if you could do it so good.
I know.
But the vacuum line, though, does just make me think of, like, do we or do we not have a Xanax detector, which is coming up as well. I love it.
Gonna need a Xanax detector.
Do we or do we not have a Xanax detector?
I wonder, like,
for Divide and Conquer. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love that episode. So oh my God. Part of me wonders, like, does he do it on purpose or is it truly like he doesn't remember the name? I can see it both ways. And I think it might be a combination of both, where sometimes he just doesn't know and he calls it whatever he calls it, or like he just does it as a bit. Like, this is my bit. I'm going to like make up names for alien shit because I'm bored.
Oh, I'm sure.
And have nothing else to do.
Oh, I'm sure. But it works because like, it's a working.
It is a point across. Yeah.
It shows that he just doesn't take himself too seriously.
Yeah, it's better to say a wrong word that sounds somewhat like what you're trying to talk about than just be like, that thing, you know, like, that doesn't help.
Yeah.
So at least a vacuum for vocuum kind of helps a little bit. So.
Yeah. So the other soldiers start to wander around. They see the message. They see, like, a pop that's projected in the sky, like, him dying. And they're like, well, shit, like, what do we do now? Like, we don't have to fight. I don't want to fight. Nelson looks at Rogers and he's like, what's going to happen to us? Where are we going to go? And he's just like, we're going to go home. And then that's the episode. That's it.
Like, and done.
Zoom out.
Like, you guys were in intense battle training for years. And then, okay. We saw one thing and we're done. We're going to go home. Okay. Pretty bow. It's annoying.
I mean, they are friends, though. Like, they're him and his second in command are like on opposite sides of like the game. So they probably don't want to actually kill each other. They were just doing it because they thought they had to. And I bet it's hard because it's like all of this stuff that we've been working to so long is bullshit. Like, what do I like? My life is a lie. Like, everything I've worked so hard for is a lie. So. Some discussion and fun facts. I already told this one, but in the infirmary, when Jack is trying to get Kyle to eat, Jack's sandwich changes shape and size several times. Sam gets the scratch on her face at the beginning of their time at the camp and changes size by healing. By the time the gate back to Earth later that same day, it's completely gone. Hmm. So the whole course of that interaction happened within a day. By the time she gets back to Earth, her scratch is completely healed.
That's suspicious.
Yeah, I made the tapping. Like, what happened to you, girl?
Tell us, please.
Felix, scratch your cat, dog. Who knows? So, and then it's also never revealed how Apophis was able to replicate all the Earth equipment, uniforms, weapons, including mortars, tents, etc. This is the only episode where the Gould are shown to be able to do this. So again, it's never revisited. Where did they get all this stuff? I don't know. So I tried, guys.
So, but okay. But like, okay, for themes, Rebecca, you made a good point about what'd you say is like a common theme? It's the war games. Is like,
yeah, I was trying to look up and I found this one interesting example of it. The idea of like the war is over, but the soldiers are on like an island somewhere or something and don't know it is and continue doing the thing. There's this one for this Japanese soldier.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. His name was Hiro Onoda. And they put him on this island and basically said hamper enemy attacks on the island and never surrender or, you know, take your own life. Don't like become a prisoner of war. Mm-hmm. And so he just kept doing that.
Yeah.
Like, until when he heard, like when apparently engaged in guerrilla warfare, and then when Japan surrendered, he thought it was a ruse. So he just continued living by the same rule, like never surrender. So this is like the concept of it is based in some truth. Like, and I knew I had heard that. I don't know if it was about him or some other cases as well of soldiers not getting the message or not believing the message and still following orders, you know, word for word.
Well, and that just for me goes into a conversation around mental health and well-being and like a reality check of like, what is your reality? And like, how far do you go into this commitment of, you never know who to trust. You never know like what's the reality. And like, I just don't, that'd be such a hard space to get into because you don't know, like, and because that's the story. Was he the one that was like up in the Pacific Northwest? Is that where that you were talking about, Rebecca?
No, he was on what was it say? What island? Lubang Island. It was southwest of Manila in the Philippines. He was there. He did the thing, stayed in the jungle, gathering intelligence on people for 29 years.
Mm-hmm. Whoa. Mm-hmm. What happened to him?
Hold, please. Let me just keep reading this article really quickly.
But I feel like there's someone in the Pacific Northwest that also, and then they ended up like making a statue of him in the town or something. Okay, the unlikely bond between an Oregon town and the man who refused to surrender. And the man who bombed. Oh, this is the man who bombed it. Yeah, it's fascinating.
Holy crap. He returned to Japan in 1974 at the age of 52, still wearing his old imperial uniform. He was pardoned by then President Marcos of the Philippines for the crimes committed while he still believed that he was at war. Family, who thought he was dead, saw him for the first time since he was a 22-year-old. So 30 years later.
Oh, my God.
He struggled to adapt to, like, modern Japan. And then he... After a year after he returned, he moved to a Japanese colony in Sao Paulo for a more tranquil life. And then he got married. And then he died in 2014.
Wow. Well, I hope he found peace, because that's like a prison sentence. Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. A third of his life. The one thing that I could think of, like, to muster, like, through this episode was the romanticization of war. Mm-hmm. And I think of like all these war movies, and I actually saw a TikTok or like a YouTube video that was like, there's two different kinds of war movies. You have like regular war movies that mm-hmm. are kind of like, they kind of make it seem romantic, of like the brotherhood of fighting next to your brother. And it's not okay. Like, if you die, you die. Like, that's not romantic. And then you have anti-war movies, which kind of take a different approach to it. And the one that I think of right away, which was an excellent movie, was called Free State of Jones, and it's about the Civil War. In Mississippi, there was a town or like a county that kind of like revolted against the Confederacy, and it was super good. And it reminds me of, there was a quote in there where like his nephew died, he was shot because he was fighting for the Confederacy, and the one, Matthew McConaughey's one friend, was like, well, he died for a good cause. And Matthew McConaughey was like, no, he just died. Like, that's mm-hmm. it. Like, he died fighting a war for somebody else who doesn't give a fuck about him. And that's what I'd like. A lot of these war movies seem to romanticize war and like, again, like the mm-hmm. brotherhood and fighting for a cause. And when you think about it, it's like, I'm fighting for a government or a country that does not give a fuck about me, that I am just cannon fodder. And I
would be very curious for anyone who does listen to us that is military, that has thoughts on this, like recognizing like none of us have been military. Like, I know why I would never join. My sister was an officer in the army, like, and she's married. Like, so there's varying degrees of like our interpretation of like war and that experience and like why, what's the motivator. And I know there are people who join it for certain reasons. I'm curious what those reasons would be, like truly mm-hmm. knowing like how our country is right now, like what exactly is that motivator? And like, do you feel like there's deceptions in that and like what it is? And like, do they dangle? Like, I know a lot of reason why certain people have joined is like education. All the other reasons, not the like propaganda, like fighting for the US. And the people honestly that do feel that way, I'm a little bit scared of. Like, I'm a little bit like, if that's your only reason, like I'm a little bit concerned. But if there were these other benefits, okay, let me hear you out. So I would love to learn and like hear from that, because I am very much like Miss Peace and Harmony about this stuff. But yeah. what was that? Because I feel for those who went through mandatory draft scenarios, like, could you imagine any of us being mandatory drafted into something and having no choice and ultimately being in a kill or get killed scenario and being pushed to that limit, and then what that would do to your brain space? Like, I couldn't fathom that, like, if I was forced to do that. And there are so many vets that have been forced in that scenario. That's just horrifying for me.
Yeah. And I don't know when the last draft was, if it was Vietnam or Korea. But a lot of younger people who have served have not had to deal with the draft. It has not been used in decades. And it's not fair. I don't think it's right. If you're going to draft people, at least draft men and women too. That's a whole argument. I'm not going to get into that. But if you're going to draft, be fair about it and draft men like they do in Israel. Like, I believe they all have to do mandatory, like,
they have, yeah,
service, men and women alike. So they make it fair. But that kind of leads me to my next topic, was like the predatory recruitment. And I don't know if everyone else in high school has had this experience, but like, we'll see army and military recruiters come in and set up shop and like hand out pamphlets to like fucking high schoolers.
Mm-hmm.
And they use that allure of an education and a better life. Get out of your shitty hometown where you have mm-hmm. no prospects. You're poor and you have no money, so you can't go to college on your own. We can give you that. We can, you just got to mm-hmm. like sign up, sign your life away for a couple of years and we'll give you a better life. And honestly, like from what I've heard, military recruitment is down because this younger generation ain't having it. They're like, fuck the government. Mm-hmm. I'm not fighting for them. Like, they can kiss my ass.
Well, it was interesting. So 9/11 happened my senior year of high school. Mm-hmm. So my friends were prime candidates for recruitment, and just like hearing their stories of so many of my classmates were so just like cherry picked, like, okay, because a lot of them chose to opt out of college and they went to military. Like, they got rid of their scholarships. They didn't do that. They were so passionate by what had happened. And they lost those years of their lives, and some, you know, have a lot of regret around it. But I feel like that's the last big kind of push where unity happened, where people wanted to join for a cause and then realized later on, like, the reality of what they had done and the bait and switch. And, you know, they didn't know. There had no been like major war.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
They didn't know what would actually happen. So anyway, and Irish Keg Warriors commentary, if we wanted, like,
that's Adam. I can call him.
No. He's here in the chat.
He's commented in the chat.
I was using his comment, but I didn't know if he wanted to be outed as Adam or not in the scenario.
Oh, whoops. Sorry, baby.
I was trying to.
He brings up a very good point on that comment, though.
So. Yeah. Do you want to read it? Read that? Okay.
Can I read it, Adam? I'm going to read it.
He was going to call him so we could talk to him, but
we'll read it because then people can hear it. Or people can hear.
He says, when I went through an overwhelming number of us were running from something. That something could literally be anything, responsibilities, fears, etc. I enlisted as a means to find my identity.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I think everyone has their own motives and it's all different. People can do it to like escape their financial situation and like as a way out of whatever, you know, they look at their family and it's like mm-hmm. generation after generation of my family has not escaped this town and they all become like coal miners or work at the plant or something. And I want to escape that. Some people do it because they really do want an education and they know that they don't have the means of getting it elsewhere or otherwise. Some people do it because they want to give back and serve their country in the particular way. And they have a feeling of duty.
I almost went in two different times in my life. Almost.
Tell us why.
The first one was the idea of getting out of high school, wanting to go into the Air Force Academy, interestingly, because I wanted to ultimately go do like FBI work or something. Like I was really, really interested in that. Prior to me knowing about the X-Files, I was interested for that long. Like basically since in fifth grade, we went to Washington, D.C. and I toured the FBI building. I was like, I want to do this. So the clearest path to me to be able to do that is have military experience. And then that was like Air Force was the most appealing of all the different branches. So that was the first time. And then the second time was when I was considering trying to go into med school because it was if you're a doctor in the military, if you go through med school through their programs, you don't have to like you don't have that giant bill when you come out of it.
Yeah.
So those were the two times I almost did.
Interesting. Yeah.
And no recruiter was like didn't ever talk to a single recruiter. Those were like my plans that I had. I wasn't listening to anybody else, but I don't know. I feel like they're both kind of decent reasons for mm-hmm. wanting to do it. And they like different. Yeah. Yeah. I don't know.
Well, I remember Nell has a comment, says my mom enlisted to join the band and traveled abroad with them. I love that.
I know that's somebody cool. who was in the army mm-hmm. band. She got in. Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be so curious, people's, because we talk a lot about military and this or that. And like, I just want to, while I'm very like anti-war and all that, but like, I'm very curious for those who have had that passion or calling for it. Why? Like, what was the motivation behind it? Beyond like if there's additional commentary to this, like I get why, but I don't know.
Well, honestly, for me, it's just to call permission? Adam. If you wanna, we can ask him questions and his experience.
I'll talk while you call him. Right. I honestly feel like EMS kind of scratched the same itches for me. Mm-hmm. So in a very interesting way, kind of roundabout ended up doing that instead.
Hello, hi, Adam.
Hi, Adam.
He's not going to hear any of the rest of us. So
no. Sarah. Oh, well, he is kind of watching. Just make sure. Yeah. Don't echo.
You're good. There's going to be a delay, but.
Okay. No echo. Okay. So you kind of mentioned in your comment, like why you joined. Did you experience like any recruitment things in high school? Like, do you remember any of that? Where like they tried to get people to join up?
Well, I think when I was going through high school, I graduated in 2006. We were on the cusp of like, I feel like backlash for recruitment in that environment, like really starting to come to a head. So I remember it happening like sophomore, junior year, like, you know, you'd have like two or three guys in military uniforms would come in and, you know, they would set up like a table in the lunchroom.
Yep.
Because, you know, that would be like mm-hmm. the best opportunity that they have, obviously, to sit down and talk to everybody. Then senior year, I remember that not happening at all. Because I think like too many parents like took issues with that and then just put a stop to it.
Rightfully so. So you mentioned reasons why you joined. Do you know like of the people that you spoke with, like in your experience, like other people, why they joined, like what are some things that you heard of people you interacted with of like why they joined and what was their motivation?
Well, to be honest, like when we were going through, like there's that propaganda basically answers that I feel like anyone and everyone was kind of putting out there that they kind of just got out of the pamphlet when, you know, they first started looking at the military. But honestly, like the longer that we were in there, it was actually one of our drill sergeants that kind of really pointed it out, or it might've been two of them. They'd both been former Marines that had transferred to, the Army side of things. And they were the ones that kind of like pointed it out to all of us that, an overwhelming majority of them, or us rather, had all enlisted because we were actually just running from something. And when I say like responsibilities, like that could be kids. There are people that enlisted to get away from kids, to get away from family, to get away from spouses.
That's wild. Mm-hmm. Like, fuck my wife. I want to get out of here.
Yeah. Or husband.
That's crazy. So like, damn, I got
to
think.
There were people too. They took that to the length of, people that were like, you know, still going through the class with us, but they had failed. I forget what the term was, but they were basically, you know, they're held there even if they're failing, because the government will only ship everyone out en masse. Like, you know, they won't ship somebody who only survived 2 or 3 weeks or 4 weeks in basic training, ship them back home. They'll keep them there. And then like a large majority of the jobs that are actually completed on post, at least while I was going through, was being completed by people that, you know, had basically failed the course like only a couple weeks through.
Damn. Do you guys have any other questions for Adam?
No, I think that answered it. I think that's just nice to hear from someone like actually mm-hmm. get their voice on there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much, Adam.
Thank you.
You might have to repeat the question too, because there's a...
Nope, they're good.
He's still good. Delayed.
We're good. Okay. Thank you, baby. Love you. It's, bye.
It's like that episode around with the black hole, like the mm-hmm. delay that seemed like we don't know what's.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's, and he has talked about some other experiences that he's had too, and I won't like go into them now, but mm-hmm. it's good to see like you're totally right, Christina. Some of the people that join because they're like, I want to kill things. Like, that fucking terrifies me. Like, please stay away from me. Don't come near me. Like, you're scary. But there's so many different reasons and motivations that people have. But the fact that there is this predatory nature about it where they set up shop in your fucking high school cafeteria to get you to join. I just, like, that's kind of what I got out of this episode, bringing it back to Stargate, was like, they had this, like, romantic view, and not like romantic like kissy smoochy, but like this like loyalty and dedication, and we are gonna fight and whatever. And Apophis was predatory, and he's like scooped them up and like brainwashed them and like made them fight for some bullshit reason, and then they real thank god they realized like this is bullshit, like he's dead, I don't want to fucking do this anymore, I want out. So good for them. Love that for them.
Absolutely. Oh, okay, I'm so glad we've gotten this episode like out of our system and can move on.
What do we have next? I feel like
Forever and a Day.
Okay, that's okay.
It's something. I mean, it's we finally wrap up a major plot point of the series.
I mean, I like this episode just because it gives a little bit more priority to my favorite person, sort of. But I also hate him in this episode. So
it's also a little trippy, a little out there.
A little bit, but we got this.
So I think that's it, guys.
Nice.
That's it.
Oh, I was just looking at how far we are away from my hated episode. We still got like 6 or 7 to go.
I'm so excited for that episode. Just because I know you hate it so much. I can't wait to talk to you about it.
Oh. And literally not just as a Sam Jack shipper either. Like, I hate the episode, period. No question.
Wait, so. Which one? Which episode?
100 days.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, so if that's it, I have somebody else to close the iris for us.
Yay!
Craig the Wraith. You didn't say anything. I don't know, maybe you just thought I was like, this is terrible. We're never going to use this. But you sent me this email. You sent us this email back in October, and I did not see it until today.
Don't know why.
Also, you've commented to us since then, so I'm very confused, but I do have it now. So everyone, Craig the Wraith is going to close the iris for us right now.
Huh, you dare insult us. These negotiations are over and your world is doomed. Human, close your iris.